Hi, little girl.
Hi.
How are you?
Good.
Are you good?
I'm good.
Yeah. Do you know what season this is?
I'm not sure.
You're not, because you just, like, were up there reading about it.
Oh, Advent.
Advent. Oh, very good. So, can you tell me what Advent's all about?
Waiting?
What?
Waiting?
Waiting. Good job. Or 30 even. Or 24? What are we waiting for?
Jesus?
Huh. See, you're pretty smart, I see. You were just lighting a candle up there. Can you tell me what that was for?
Hope.
Hope. I hope this mic works this week. Do you know what the next candle is for?
Peace.
Wow, you're really good at this. That's really good. And then there's a third candle. Do you know what that's for?
Yeah, it's pink and it's joy.
It's not pink, it's white. And we had this conversation, I think you forgot. But you're right, it is joy, absolutely. And then there's one more, which is the last Sunday before Christmas. Do you remember what the very last candle is for?
Jesus?
That was a really, really good guess, but no. If you can just think you had... Come here. Have we met? Yeah, Bridget, right? Yeah. What is it?
Love.
Love. So we have hope, peace, joy, and love while we are waiting for... And what's Christmas?
Jesus' birthday. Well, actually, he was born in the spring, but they gradually moved it back to winter.
That's right. What she said. And is it an important birthday, do you think?
Yes.
Yes? What is the meaning of Christmas? You can come back over here, because I'm going to come there if you don't come here, so...
I think it's about being with family and having fun with each other.
Being with family and having fun with one another? Yeah. Okay, I'll go with that. Thank you for your help. And except for the pink, you done good. Yeah. It's chairs. What else today is? Wow, welcome back. Have you been hanging out with Crystal? What is today? Do you know? Yes, it's World AIDS Day. It's World AIDS Day. I was in Baltimore during the height of the AIDS crisis in the 80s. And from the beginning of the 80s until now, there have been approximately 76 million people who have died from AIDS and HIV-related illnesses. Currently, we don't know how many have had it, because at least one out of seven, go ahead, what do you want to say? Million died. He's right. 36 million people have died. 76 million have been diagnosed with it. Thank you. And there's one out of seven right now that we don't even know if they have it or not, because it still carries a stigma. Now, you might say, Claire, sermon's on hope. And it is. Because in the height of the AIDS crisis, there was very little hope, very little optimism, very little mercy and compassion. And yet, over the years, what we have seen, even though people still can be infected and can still die is that there has been a change, hasn't there? There has been a bit of an altering of attitude and the way we deal with this, not to mention the fact of research that's been done that has at least allowed us to recognize that there is more hope now than there was then. Amen? Sort of. There is a problematic quote from Jesus in the book of John. And it's right after, turn that down just a little bit, thank you. It's right after Mary has washed Jesus' feet. And Judas is having a fit because of all the money that's being spent on the perfume. And what Jesus says is, the poor will always be with you. And that's problematic because we like to think that maybe at some point we'd be able to eradicate some of these things, right? That we could eradicate HIV and AIDS, that we could eradicate poverty, that we could eradicate all injustices, right? I mean, we've been at this for a long time just in this church, but when we take a look at moving into Advent, we realize that, well, geez, the church has been at this for a long time too, hasn't it? And while things have not yet been eradicated to the extent that we would really like them to be, the way Isaiah speaks of them in today's reading, we can't lose sight of the fact that sometimes things are different, but we just might miss it. I don't know why this is clicking, so I apologize. Diana Butler Bass says that we shouldn't necessarily be grateful for the chaos in the world. I think that's a given. But we should be grateful through it. Not grateful for it, but grateful through it. When I asked you before to get a sense of where hope resides, did anybody feel it? For real. Where does it reside? Your hands. Cayenne? In your chest. Anybody else? Chest? Your brain? Okay. Anybody else? Does anxiety reside next to it? Some days. Some days it does. Diana Butler Bass offers this. I want to change. And I want the world to change. Fear and division exhausts me. Exhausts us. We cannot live this way. Make me an instrument of gratefulness. Guide me to the way of mercy and love that leads us to peace, that I may guide others to abundant life. For the sake of healing my own heart and healing the world. There are times during hope and anxiety where we aren't sure how we should be. If you take a look at the activist is constantly moving. Have you noticed? Constantly doing something and moving into the next place. But then if you look at the mystic tends to be not moving at all. And so we have to be able to find a place where we can both be mystical, that is, introspective and sort of reflective of what it means to be in relationship with the divine, so that we can then be energized to go forward and be active in the work that needs to be done. Amen? Yeah, but I'm not done yet. We have had a relatively successful pledge drive thus far. That's good, right? Amen. Thank you. And there are times when we can get bogged down with the anxiety of what it means to raise money. We can also then be hopeful by the amount that we raise. But I don't think that we ever truly understand from the perspective of being a community what our contributions can do. How many of you over the past year have felt completely exhausted by the world. I dare you not to raise your hand. How many have you felt that no matter what you do, it's not going to make a difference? How many of you have felt, even though it makes a difference, it's just a small difference? How many of you have ever wondered, why bother? I'm going to tell you why. Because there's part of what we do in this church that we don't always have a mission moment about, or that we don't necessarily have a line item on our budget. And yet it is where hope lives and thrives. And you've heard us talk about, David Bristow is usually the one who's right on top of it, and that is some of the missions that we have and that we support through our larger and wider church. You've heard of the 5 for 5? You know that we're 5 for 5? I really want you to comprehend what these are. Not every church in the United Church of Christ participates in giving money to these particular 5 missions that are the missions of the wider church. That is, of our conference and of the United Church of Christ in general. This church is and has been for how long, Donna?
Over
20 years. More than that, 25. Per capita, we end up giving more than some of the big churches. Okay? I want you to understand the impact of where that money goes. Now, some of that money is directly put into our budget, okay, and becomes part of the 5 for 5. Other goes comes out through missions. So both of it comes out of your contributions. All right, but it comes out of one out of missions and one out of our general budget. But I want you to understand what these are. You've heard of one great hour of sharing, yes? Who knows what it is except David Bristow? Donna! You want to throw it out there, Donna?
One great hour of sharing is mostly disaster relief.
Responders to whom?
To the world. I don't think that's on.
Okay, can you give us an example of where we might have seen that recently?
Recently, wow, we've got so many things. Let me think. Hurricane relief down in Texas.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. So we see hurricane relief in Texas. We see it in the Bahamas. We see it in Puerto Rico. So when we hear of money not going to certain places, the United Church of Christ is sending money to those places and people, and that money comes out of your pocket. Now, if you donated $10, great. But if you donated 10 and 10 and 10 and 10 and 10 and 130 and 500 and 1,000, yes. And suddenly you put it together with the other churches that are participating. Imagine what you are contributing, right? We were affected, I've said this before in this church just a few years ago, that Colorado Springs for 2 years in a row received funding from the United Church of Christ, which is in Cleveland, for those who were affected by the Waldo Canyon fire and the Black Forest fire. Every church got $1,000 to help families and folks who needed just some startup funds to get going. So it comes back if needed. But if it doesn't come back, you are reaching out locally and globally to other places just because you have been willing to contribute to this. Okay? I want you to know that. Strengthen the church. So Donna and David are both going. Okay, Nancy?
Well,
that?
I gotta check it with Donna. But I think strengthen the church is new church starts and
churches that are struggling?
Yes. So it can be for new and renewing churches. It can be for new church startups. Anybody else? You want to throw something out? Okay. Last week, Monday, I went up to the Rocky Mountain Conference to have a meeting with Sue Art because I and another colleague are interested in starting a Sacred Conversations End Racism, not only for the Rocky Mountain Conference, but for the whole western region of the United Church of Christ. The ability to go and have that conversation with Sue Art and to get a program like that started is funded through Strengthen the Church. The fact that this church received a grant 3 years ago, and until this year, part of that grant was used to pay for part of my salary through the annuity, came from, so every time we contribute, we are allowing other churches to do what we've been able to do as far as new church startups or to renew. And that's pretty impressive. That reaches out far beyond this location. Neighbors in need. Oh.
I know about one-third of it goes to Native American ministries.
That's exactly right. So one-third of Neighbors in Need goes to an organization within the United Church of Christ. It's the Council for American Indian Ministries in the United States. And basically what that says is of the churches that are on these participating reservations do not always have enough money to fund or pay for a pastor or programming or anything else. So a third of that supports those churches and areas that couldn't exist without additional monies. The other two-thirds goes toward justice and peace programs in the United Church of Christ. Programs, Cayenne, that we can apply for, grants that we can apply for in the future. And what have we seen with relationship to that? So this is pretty cool, and I just found this out, so I want to make sure I get this. Hope Station was funded in part by a $10,000 grant from Neighbors in Need, is a place of transition where people who are deported but have family in the U.S. can find a meal, safe lodging, and assistance, and this is in Alabama. Another one, when LGBTQ individuals near the campus of Clemson University in the areas of upstate South Carolina unexpectedly find themselves without a home or a place to feel safe, Peace Congregational United Church of Christ will be ready to meet them. They put together a project of tiny homes so that folks who had been expelled from their families because they were in the queer community could have a place to live. That's just an example. Part of your money allowed that to happen. Okay? You get it? The Christmas Fund. Now, the Christmas Fund is something that we collect here the Sunday before Christmas Eve service. The Christmas Fund is also critical. That is the one fund that we do contribute, but we also take up extra here. What that does is that helps support retired clergy or retired administrative folks who have worked with the United Church of Christ for years. We all know what being on a limited income can be like as far as medical bills, housing, heat, food, etc. This fund is set up to help those who invested their entire lives into this ministry that I'm doing now and into the ministry that you're doing now. All of these are part of the United Church of Christ, and all of these are something that we participate in. They don't exist without you. And you've been doing this for years. Did you even know that you were doing it? Did you know to what extent you were doing it? Did you realize that you are reaching out into places like Nepal, which are building earthquake-resistance homes? Or that you are providing resilience training for war-torn areas in northern Africa? Did you know that you are providing the ability for people to have clean water after an earthquake in places that perhaps others have forgotten? This is remarkable work, and this is where hope lies. Of course there's going to be anxiety. Of course the poor are always going to be with us. But we can dream the same way that Isaiah calls us into dreaming. We can dream the same way that Advent and hope and this ritual of waiting for the birth of the Christ child calls us to be every year. That place of saying, there is something more profound than we could ever imagine. And as anxious as we get, and as frustrated as we get, and as hopeless as we seem to get, every single person in this place has made life better for somebody else on this planet. Hear that. Every person in this place has made life better for another person on this planet. If that's not hope, what is?